Welcome to minute 43 of season 7 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today from the Batminute is Niall McGowan. Welcome back to the show, Niall.
Oh, okay. Yes, I'm. I like to refer to myself as an obscure podcaster. That's my preferred intro is now, like, after watching these minutes, I'm going to start referring to myself in that way from now on. But thank you for having me, Rob.
You mean for the choices that you've made for, like, your top five? That's why you call yourself obscure?
No, it's just that the podcast itself is obscure.
Okay, that's fine.
I can't go on and say, like, we're covering these things that no one's ever heard of. It's about this guy who dresses up as a bat, okay? Now, get this. It's a bit of a weird one, but I don't know if it'll be for everybody.
Well, it depends on how much you like superhero movies and superhero shows and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, back when those movies came out, they were less popular than – or superhero movies or superhero media was less mainstream than it is today. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
I recall being part of that niche society, you know, of comic book lovers and people who, you know, who enjoyed superheroes and stuff like that in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, as opposed to nowadays where everyone pretty much knows what the MCU is and everybody knows what the DCU is, even if a lot of people don't like watching it, but I still do.
Yeah.
I'm still a big
I think now, now we're at the precipice of them driving it into the ground. So it's like it might start spiraling into unpopularity again very soon, but we'll see. Only time will tell.
Well, it has to do with the fact that I think they've run out of ideas of how to keep everything in a huge universe. You know, the way that they did the first few phases of MCU was just amazing, but you know, once they finished with Endgame, you know, it was like, okay, most of the actors said, I've had enough of this. So therefore, all the movies that they've done since then haven't been at the same level.
Yeah, yeah. But it's even now, too, they're to keep a time of recording, to keep, like, announcing, you know, cast members for Fantastic Four. And it's all really, it really feels like they're desperately trying to get in. Like, who's that guy that everybody likes? Pedro Pascal, get him in. Everyone wants to see this guy again, so get him. And who does everyone love? Natasha Lyonne, get her in. What's the big show that everyone loves at the minute? The Bear, get the guy from The Bear in here. Come on, we gotta get people back in on board with this stuff.
Right, because they, you know, when you make 30 movies in a series, you need to find a way to keep things more fun.
Yeah. But then the risk with Pedro Pascal is like he's in a lot already, man. He himself is at risk of being overexposed. So it's like you don't have a film series that in itself has done too much and you know there's too much stuff coming out all the time. And then to be like, oh, we'll get a guy who's in everything to be in it as well. It's like I don't know if it's the best choice, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see how that works out.
Yeah.
So minute 43 begins with John finishing his query and ends with the mystery guest finally speaking up.
It's like that guy, like it's just, oh, we'll get to him. We'll get to him at the end of the minute.
We will definitely get there.
Yeah.
Right. So
and also maybe put a pin in it, but like I was stunned to find out that through digging, this guy does have a name as well. Like the character has a name. I think, yes. Were you aware that this character has a name?
Has a name or has a title?
He has. I know on IMDb he's referred to as FBI chief, but then going through the Die Hard wiki, he has an actual name as well. It's never mentioned in the film. I wonder if it might have been like a novelization thing or something that they introduced him. But anyway, he has a first and last name. This guy.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, we'll get to it.
We shall get there. Yeah. So I mean, we ended things yesterday with John trying to get some information out of both Cross and Jarvis. And, you know, he had a little bit of a diatribe at the end saying that he wants to know what's going on. Who is this guy that's after him? And he begins this minute by saying, tell me why, fellas, huh? Mm. So then they go back to the pictures that we talked about 2 days ago. And Jarvis is the one who finally realizes that, okay, he's gonna have to give him some information. And he goes, the first man there is Matthias Targo, was Hungarian army. The explosive is expert. Now we believe he's working for the Iranians. And then Cobb looks at him and goes, working? It was freelance terrorism by contract. So, first of all, the actor who plays Targo that we see in this picture is actually, a callback to season two of this podcast. Nick Wyman, okay, who was born on the 18th of May 1950. So just to a peek behind the curtain, his birthday was yesterday. He was 74
Oh,
yesterday. Yeah.
no, nice. Yeah, good to hear that he's still going as well.
That's right. He has 46 acting credits on IMDb, including obviously Die Hard with a Vengeance and Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Do you know who he played in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles?
I do because I looked it up for this, but at the time I was stunned that I didn't know because like I've seen that film so many times. I've seen Die Hard with a Vengeance many times. I was like, how did I not put together that it was the same guy? Like
That's right.
it's been looking at it now, it's like, oh, it's very blatantly him. But I guess the change in accent did a lot, you know? So
Yes. I mean,
yeah, he's a
they're both, that's what it comes down to.
oh, they're both assholes. So, but he's the guy that when Steve Martin's begins his journey, when he first hails a cab, another guy tries to get into it. And of course, then later in the scene, John Candy ends up just getting in the cab by himself and taking off while the two of them are still standing, bickering in the street. But yeah, he's the guy that like Steve Martin like he offers him $10, ends up going up to 50, and then of course Nick Wyman, delivers the line like, well, anyone who would pay $50 for a cab, surely would pay 75. And you're like, oh my God, this guy is a
Seriously. But he
But
does a great
yeah,
job in that movie and in this one too.
yeah.
In
So
a
now
very
you'll
short role,
have
small
the
role
things
there.
of like the opening scene of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Kevin Bacon and Targo from Die Hard with a Vengeance feature in the opening minutes of that film. So
That's right.
yeah, and Ferris Bueller's dad, of course. Let's not forget him.
Of course, of course. So yeah, so we have this character named Matthias Targo. Now I actually looked up two things. First of all, if I've ever heard that name before, that's one. And the second thing was is what does Targo mean? So do you have answers to either of those questions?
No, I was almost surprised that because I've always just known him as Targo. Like I almost thought that the detail that he's called Matthias Targo skipped past me. I thought he was almost like he only had one name because he's such a brute, you know. I thought he would be like an old wrestler or something. It's like he just goes by Targo. Like no one knows what the rest of his name is. And then they discovered like, oh no, it's just that Simon does that thing that they do. They all doing cool cop things where they refer to people as their last name all the time. But yeah. So no, I had no. I didn't even think to look into whether it was an actual term, Targo. That was an actual word that had a translation.
Well, first of all, when I did a search for it, I saw that the character name came up, and I was like, "What? That's really weird," because it came up from a different place. It turns out that in have you ever seen any of the episodes of the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles
Oh yeah,
from the
way, way,
90s?
way back. Yeah.
Okay, so he was actually in one of those episodes.
Oh, like.
The character
Oh, wow.
of Matthias Targo, it was General. Targo. He was a Romanian general during World War I and also a vampire.
Oh.
And he
Okay.
eventually was killed by Indiana Jones by driving a stake through his heart. Okay. A young Indiana Jones. Now, the actor who played him is also a callback to season two, is an actor named Bob Peck. Actually, no, sorry, it's not a callback. It's sort of a callback, I guess you could say. Do you know who Bob Peck is?
Muldoon from Jurassic Park.
That's right, Muldoon.
Hey, well,
So
there
there you go.
we
We
go.
went because in Planes, Trains, Automobiles, we had another Jurassic Park character that or actor that showed up. Do you remember who that is? Do you have any chance?
In Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. No, it doesn't. Not off the top of my head, I can't remember.
So it was a motel owner, okay, who they tried to sell the watch to, or where he sells, where Neil sells his watch to, and then Dell doesn't manage to sell the watch to him, right? And that was played by an actor named Martin
And
Ferrero,
who is?
who played Gennaro in Jurassic Park. That's right, the
Oh,
toilet lawyer.
of course, yeah, the toilet
That's
lawyer,
right.
yeah.
That's right.
Don't
So
forget the
that
toilet
works.
lawyer. And of course, who else is in
That is
Jurassic
correct.
Park but one Samuel L. Jackson, who's
That's right. We've talked
in the
about the
van
fact
with these guys as well.
that Mr. Arnold's arm has appeared numerous times in this movie also. So the term targo is actually, it means it's a shield that was used by the Scottish Highlanders. So they would arm themselves with bows, helmets, swords, and targes. So it's actually quite interesting the way that they have that.
So I guess it's sort of like, well, he kind of functions as Simon's muscle, so he's also kind of a shield whenever he needs stuff done. Tell
Again,
Targo to do it, kind of thing.
think about
So,
it. It's very similar to the word target.
that's true. That's true.
So it's the idea of, having a round target that you use. So, I guess you want your enemies to shoot at that target instead of at you, or something like that.
I'm still kind of getting hung up though on the idea though of him being Targo in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and then like that dispute with Steve Martin going very differently, where he just like starts throwing him around the street and stuff. It's just like Steve Martin trying to crawl away, like, where are you going? Just, I remember that scene when I was a kid, like Targo beating up McClane really got to me. I remember being very, very
Well,
disturbed by
because
that
he's
scene.
holding a chain and beating him with a chain.
I think it's one shot, but it's the shot of McClane crawling away and him just like swaggering behind him, going like, "Where do you think you're going, little man?" And like it really has a moment of like, "Oh, McClane's really screwed here." Like, but then
That's right.
thankfully he gets the upper hand and stuff again. But it's my first time watching this when I was like probably like 10 or something like that. I remember loving it, but then that one scene, been like, "Oh boy, this is getting a bit much, huh?"
Yeah, I can understand that. I can understand how you would think that for sure.
But have you got much more? Have you got cause I never know what people want to do in the movies by minutes format, because I always like to stretch things out. So like, I don't know if you want to get into all the Nick Wyman of it now, or you want to go, oh no, you save that for later in the season.
Whatever you want. You mean of this
That's
movie or in general?
no, because because then next to him is also Sam Phillips too, and I just
Okay,
wasn't
right.
sure.
Well,
Might as
right.
well.
We're about to get to that one. Right. And from besides the other information that I got about Nick Wyman is he's really, really tall. He's 6'5". He's 1.96 meters tall.
I mean, yeah, it works. Like he's got a good. Again, he looks pretty, like when he's beating up McClane. It looks like McClane's really screwed because the guy's like freaking giant next to him as well.
That's
But
right.
yeah,
That's right.
good casting.
Yeah, for sure. And then John has you can see that he's got great insight because of his next line, because he basically then says, "Who's the girl?" Because we saw a picture of a man and a woman together, but we don't know at first who they want to refer to, and they just showed the two of them in an airport. That's all we get to see. Oh, it looks like an airport type of thing. So it shows that John is very observant. He basically knows that if there's a woman in the picture, there's a reason for it. This isn't just a random person that got in the way. Like when you take a picture and stuff like that, and afterwards you look at it and you're like, "How did that person get there?" It's like you weren't expecting.
It's not just McClane being a horn dog either. I've just been like, who is that? Like, who's the girl?
That's right.
Like, she's beautiful. Like, that guy, I've got to meet her.
So the response that he's given by Cross is Targo's other half. Rumor is it the Israelis slipped the bomb in between their sheets. He wasn't at home, but they think maybe they got her. So first of all, I have a lot of trouble with this comment here because he says the rumor. Okay, the rumor is who did it. Fine, but you'd think that they would have better intelligence and know if they actually were able to kill somebody. It's not as if they're saying, okay, this happened last week. This is probably something that happened months, if not years beforehand, where they were trying to get this, trying to get Targo.
And then we piece it together. But like, could you do see she has scars later as well?
Yes.
And so I wonder if it's supposed to be implying that, like, yeah, it was that's from that bomb. Like, I just always assumed, like, oh, she's a rough and tumble wife. But like, maybe they're trying to indicate, like, oh, yeah, she might have been killed in a bomb. And then when you see the scarring on her, it's supposed to be like, well, that's from that, you know?
Right. Okay. Could be.
That's I mean, you get true. Once you get into some scar minutes, you can really get into that then, I guess.
That's true also.
Yeah.
Right. So I was actually shocked. She only has three movie credits on IMDb. Yeah.
This was a thing, the big thing about, this actress, Sam Phillips. This was info I found out a couple of years ago. And now it's some of my, like, icebreaker always go to, like, not for everyone, because a lot of people will be like, what the hell are you talking about? But it's one of my favorite random bits of trivia to bring up about, like, what other stuff Sam Phillips from Die Hard with a Vengeance has done. Do you want to do the honors, bro?
No, go ahead. Feel free.
Well, basically, I'm a big fan of the Gilmore Girls, like the hit TV show Gilmore Girls, which is just gains more popularity every year, that show, even since it's finished. But throughout, the show, you always hear this always jangly acoustic guitar music. And there's a woman going, la, 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 la. And then randomly on an unrelated podcast a couple of years ago, a guy was on there who knew Sam Phillips personally, and he was just like, oh, yeah, talk about her, mentioned her albums. And I was like, yeah, she's the voice of the Gilmore Girls, too. Like, she did all the music, and she's that woman going, la, 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 la. And that my mind was blown in the street of, like, the lady from Die Hard with a Vengeance is the la, la, la lady from Gilmore Girls. Like, oh, that's crazy. And, now it's become my favorite bit of, like, random trivia. to bring that out for people,
and what's ironic
a lot of the time.
That's right. What's ironic about that though is that, from what I recall, she doesn't say a single word in this movie.
She's a acclaimed musician and singer, and then like, oh, she does not. You would never know from this movie.
That's right. I don't think she says anything.
I don't think she does. Like, I don't know if it's maybe towards the end. But no, I don't think she does. No, I think she's silent the entire way through.
Maybe that was part of her injuries.
Yeah, it could have been. Yeah, shrapnel in through the throat, and then now she's at the when they're trying to like, she had to turn to terrorism because
I'm assuming. Let's put it this way: she was already a terrorist beforehand. If they were trying to kill her and Targo together.
Oh, she might have just been with Targo. They're trying to get him. She was happily working on Gilmore Girls. And then now she got shrapnel on the throat, and they're like, we have to let you go, Sam. Like, if you can't do the la-la-las, then we have no use for you. And so then she just had to become like crazy carved knife, stabby lady later on in the movie. So,
yeah, that could be a problem.
Oh, there's something like that. You get into it way later on, but like I really want to know more about the dynamic between Targo, her, and Simon, and how Simon hooked up with her, and what was going on there, the bizarre love triangle going on between these folks.
Definitely.
Yeah, and particularly too, back in the 90s, Jeremy Irons, you could almost imagine he'd be like, well, we can all get in on this, right? Like he would just 90s Jeremy Irons. Totally just like strip off and like Targo, you come here too. Like there's no reason we have to fight. We can all just get in on it.
Anything is possible. okay, so at this point, they flip to the other picture, and Jarvis continues and says the second man was an obscure colonel in the East German army. He ran an infiltration unit, the kind of thing the Nazis did at the Battle of the Bulge. English-speaking troops. And then John looks at him and goes, yeah, I saw the movie. So, first of all, I love that, because that basically says that John's a movie fan, like us.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I'm thinking of that generation too, because it's still around the kind of Battle of Bulge movies, like the '60s, right? So then you're still in the Roy Rogers kind of wheelhouse of like,
That's right.
oh yeah, when McClane was a teenager or a kid, this is what like his weekends would have been going out, probably to see the Battle of the Bulge, and they would have had like a Roy Rogers serial on beforehand or something. So he would have been in his element.
Right, that's true. I mean, the movie The Battle of the Bulge came out in 1965. And it has an amazing cast. It has Henry Fonda, Robert Shaw, Telly Savalas, Robert Ryan, Dana Andrews, Charles Bronson, you know, all the typical guys you'd find in action movies in the 1960s. But
It's one I've never seen, but like it's such a because you know the peak of How the Sausage is Made. We're currently recording this on a Sunday afternoon. It seems like a perfect Sunday afternoon film. Like it's a going.
Well, it's long. It's like I think it's like 3 hours or 3.5 hours.
Yeah. So it's the type of thing like you go in, your dad will be sitting watching that on a Sunday. It's just like that's the day gone is watching Battle of the Bulge basically.
Okay, but that's what people do. So
yeah. No, 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 that, yeah, I'm saying it because maybe I'll do that after we're done here. You know?
There you go.
I love the phrasing though. I just found it so strange of saying he was an obscure colonel, and like, well, what do you mean? Like, oh, well, not one of the big famous colonels. Like, you know, like you know, not like Patton or someone. He's like, oh, this guy's a bit more obscure of a colonel. It's like I don't think colonels are inherently celebrities, you know. You could just say he was a colonel in the army. And don't expect McClane to be like, I don't think I've heard of him. It's like, oh no, this one's like he's like an underground colonel. Like he's you know, only kind of cool people like us would know about this guy.
That's right. Yeah, no, but I think the idea is that he's you know, because he's part of a secret unit, so not many people, you know about the work that he did.
Yeah,
that type of thing.
I love too though that this like because he's not like, trying to. They're talking about like all deep infiltration units and stuff like this. And like, oh yeah, it's like an obscure colonel, and he's just dressed to the nines in the most colonelly outfit in the universe.
And he looks like he's in the SS.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he looks very very Nazi-ish. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And again, this is
that wasn't my uniform. That was just a costume party we were going to. Like this is them all heading out on the Saturday night or something.
and it's 50 years after World War II at this point. You know, when this movie came out, so you know you can't conceivably believe that he was fighting during World War II. But the basic idea of the Battle of the Bulge or of the what they're talking about here is the fact that they had a unit, it was called Operation Greif, where they had a unit where they trained them, you know, to be, they knew English very well, and they went and, you know, killed a patrol and then took over the patrol and pretended to be Americans in order to try and infiltrate and hopefully, you know, kill some high-ranking officers and stuff like that.
Well, that all links back to Runs in the Family, because of course one of Hans Gruber's most famous things is like when the push came to shove with McClane, and he just wanted to, oh God, please no, and just like pretended to be an American to infiltrate McClane's trust. So
maybe he was part of it.
Yeah, maybe he was part of it, or maybe like his brother just kept talking about it. And he's like, oh, he's just like, what do I do? What would Simon do in this scenario? Who would have been the older brother? Hans is the older brother, right?
They do mention it at some point. I think Hans is the older brother, yes.
Oh, no, they do. I think they even say in this week is like he's Hans Gruber's little brother. Yeah. So it's hard to gauge those two guys. The actor's pretty much the same age as far as I'm aware, Irons and Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, like, because he's obviously got a more of a close-up picture, which literally looks like it might have been a shot they took of Jeremy Irons later in this film. Like, I think he's wearing the same suit and stuff, that same striped shirt and thing. And it's literally, oh, the guy, like, literally the next scene, we took this photo from that scene or something. But he's still quite in the shadows. And so I'm wondering if they know they're dealing with a known actor here, if they're trying to not completely reveal him just yet, because people might be like, oh, that's Jeremy Irons. Or they're trying to be like, who's this guy kind of getting a vibe from? And then when eventually you do see him, it's much more of a, it's Jeremy Irons, you know? Maybe I'm reading too much into that.
No, it could be. I mean, again, there's no, in the opening credits here, they don't mention any names.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't have to worry about it from that perspective that, you know, that you're going to see it right away and say, oh, it's Jeremy Irons. You know, we've only heard his voice up until now. This is the first time that we actually can see.
Let's say to him, you've been there, but like the opening minutes of this film, some of the like the Love and Spoonful kicking in, and just all the shots in New York, and then just cutting that explosion, and then just like you're in the movie, it's started, you're in now. Just no messing around. So good. So such efficient storytelling. Just be like, here's the city. It's busy. Look at this. Hey, it's summertime. Boom. Here's a bomb. Hey, here's Walter. Like in, literally within like what 2 minutes, you're just in the film. Like
it's, right. It they get you in very quickly. They do.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
Also, I always have associations with this with and speaking about like the Simon reveal.
Mm-hmm.
But very particular because over here when I was a kid, like a lot of the time, films like this I would have seen for the first time on TV when they premiered on TV, and then would have been on there's a couple of films I had taped off the television that like I watched so much that to this day I remember where the ad breaks were and stuff.
Oh wow.
And there was always a when they premiered things on what's called in Ireland it was called UTV, but in England where I'm living now it's called ITV, same station though. But they always had like a news at 10, and a thing that I would find unconscionable now of like, oh, they would interrupt the film for 45 minutes for a 45 minute news broadcast, and then you just had to come back, and then like then there was the second half of the film. But when you were a kid, it was really annoying because you'd tape a thing and then you'd have to go down to the video recorder because we didn't have a remote and like push the fast forward button to get through 45 minutes of the news at 10.
Oh, wow.
Because the film had just been left on the record. But I remember the moment it cut to the news at 10 was the big reveal of Simon and him going like, they bought it. You can begin. Which is such a tease to be like, not, you know, you can begin. Oh, actually, well, let's wait 45 more minutes. So, yeah, just sit through the goddamn news at 10 now. But yeah, just thought that's a very personal memory to me. Is like, oh yeah, I remember where all the ad breaks are. The same thing too when Mogwai Minute were doing Gremlins 2. It was like I could tell you exactly when the news at 10 kicked in.
And then, oh, that's really funny. I mean, I remember that I had a copy of Lethal Weapon 2 that I copied off of TV also, and it was the same thing. It was they cut off to have like a news bulletin right at the end when he pushes on the button in order for the cargo thing to fall down, and so he pushes on the button, it starts falling, and then they had to cut to the news. And then after the news, you saw the rest of it fall down on him. It was great.
It's just great. Like going like, you know, at the end of Twins when that big chain falls on the guy and just goes on for like 3 minutes or something. It's endless chain. It'd be a great time to cut to the news at 10 right there.
Right.
Go away for 45 minutes and come back and Arnie and DeVito are still watching the chain falling on this guy.
Exactly.
Oh.
But, right. So then they continue with their information about this guy, and they go, all we know of him is the GDR medical records show that he suffers from migraines. His name is Peter Kree.
This is one of my most quoted lines in this, just because of the way it's delivered.
Well, before we get to the delivery. The bottom line is that they basically have said nothing. There's no information that they're giving here. You know, according to his records, the only thing we can find out is that he suffers from migraines. They're like, hello.
Yeah. And that's just setting up like a kind of a thing for later on in the movie where
Correct. He's
able to give McLean aspirin. It's like,
oh, that's
right. He has aspirin because he has migraines.
That's there you right. go. That's
like a detail. Didn't need to be there. It's just like a nice little character moment, though. Then McLean opened it, and then the bottle been empty. It's a goddamn.
That's right. Okay, and now you can say the line that you want to say.
Yeah, yeah. Because his name is Peter Krieg. I don't know why that always sticks out to me. Because again, it's so like, why are they darting around it so much? Like, I don't know. Maybe they have a rationale for this approach of like, let's drip feed him information in case he's involved or something. Like, what, we're trying to catch McClane out? Like, why wouldn't you? Your first thing would be like, this guy's name is Simon Peter Gruber. Like, that'd be, because then instantly you're gonna know what's going on.
Maybe he just doesn't. Maybe he doesn't want to admit the fact that he is Hans Gruber's brother.
Yeah. Although, I don't know, why would you keep that from him as well? Like, it just doesn't make any. Why, the guy's done so much. He's so involved in this case. Why wouldn't you give him all the information up front? Why would you go in with his name is Peter Krieg and like don't know him? Like, why are you like, oh, Pete Krieg's my neighbor. Yeah, I know that guy. Like,
exactly. You
know, he's always dressed up as a German colonel. Like, it's he's weird that way. Yeah, I just don't understand. Like, they're, you know, it's good. It's good for pacing, and it's good for the reveal that we get, you know, within the next 2 minutes of exactly what they're building up to. But yeah, it just seems like it's counterintuitive to the FBI to be like,
yeah.
Although maybe that's why that guy's hanging. The one guy's hanging in the back because, you know, Jarvis and Cross are just so like, oh, these goddamn idiots. Like, it's just sitting there like, I don't want any involvement with these two. Like, I'm gonna deal with them every day. I'm sick of them. I'm sitting in the back by myself. I'll speak when I need to speak. Okay.
And John is actually the one who catches on about this whole thing. And, you know, he says to them, well, that is an exceptional report, fellas. Now you want to tell me what the hell this has to do with me?
So the Walter sitting there too, like, oh, your report could be a little bit more like this, John. You know, when you do paperwork, it's very sloppy and I have to deal with it every time. It's very, very frustrating. You know?
And then the guy in the back finally speaks up and he says, the name Gruber mean anything? And then he gets cut off.
Yeah, yeah. What a cliffhanger!
That's right.
What a time to go to the news at 10 right there.
That's right. Okay, so this actor is credited on IMDb and in the movie's credits as FBI director. But we know that you know his real name. So why don't you tell us his real name?
Yeah, apparently I don't know. I'm assuming this must have been gathered from the novelization, because that's the only, like, if they don't mention it on IMDb and it's not in the end credits, then where else are you going to get this from? But apparently, yeah, he's the actor is Richard Russell Ramos.
That's
and he's
right.
Playing FBI chief Hugh Prantera. So Hugh Prantera is this guy. Maybe I don't know, one of some like later games he reappeared or something, or like, it's odd that they have like a first and last name. Where his whole deal is that he's kind of supposed to be mysterious, too. Like, FBI chief just suits him because these guys are very like, oh, I'm Major Jarvis, this is Major Cross, blah, 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 blah. And then this guy's just in the back. Like, you don't need to know my name. I talk when I need to talk. You don't need to know about me, McClane. Okay, right. I am just the guy. Like, but no, apparently Hugh Prantera.
What I love about in the wiki is they have this very small little paragraph about him explaining who he is. He's the FBI agent in charge. Pantera was seen in the van along with Agent Andy Cross and Bill Jarvis from another agency.
Yeah.
It was he who revealed to McClane that Simon is Hans Gruber's brother after asking the latter if the last name Gruber meant anything to him. Then Simon calls, finding out the FBI is aware of his presence. And that's it. Mm. That's all they have.
Yeah. As I always love the people who update these wikis, because we have to deal with them in the movies by minutes business. We have to deal with these Wikipedia pages so much. And again, some of the Batman ones are crazy. It's always like Napier Hood with yellow coat and all these guys. And they'll write little write-ups of them like, Napier Hood with the yellow coat was a guy who, like, in Access Chemicals got strung up by Batman. And you're like, is there any more? I was like, nope, I'm literally just telling you what you saw on screen. You know?
Exactly. You know, well, come on. What information can they give us beyond that?
Was there a Die Hard with a Vengeance novelization?
Yes, there was, I actually have discussed it numerous times because one of the glaring differences in it is that when McClane is on the street, you know, with the sandwich card, it just says I hate everybody.
Oh, they got the TV edit.
That's right. That's right. I always remember talking about the fact that they did it that way. I don't remember which ending they used, because there's three different endings for this movie. So I don't remember which one is in the novelization, but we'll get there many, many months from now when we talk about
Is it the that's what that sandwich board scene is like a, it's a scene that like it grew with me over time, and like when I first saw it as a kid, I didn't really get what was happening. I was just like, okay, I don't understand what that means. And then when you're a teenager, you're like, oh yeah, I see now they're trying. And then realizing as you like grow up and you realize like where Harlem is and all that kind of thing, and the scene that's like you're it goes from like oh God, okay, yeah, this is basically a suicide mission. Like that's the now I get why that was such a big deal. But
Exactly.
but yeah, Hugh Prantera. He didn't strike me as a Hugh. I thought he had a cooler name than that. But I think that's just the sunglasses doing a lot of heavy lifting for him there, I guess. Although you never know, he might just be like McClane. He is also hungover. He's
It's
just
very
chilling in the
possible.
back, just like, I wish I had some of that Gruber migraine medication myself right now. Having to deal with these two jerkwads every day, and then just let me sit in the back and just have the door open and rest my head, rest my eyes.
That's right. And now I gotta talk. And now I gotta explain things.
Yeah.
So.
Although I wonder if he was like, if there was a little negotiation where like, 'cause maybe he has seniority. And they're like, so what are we going to tell him? And then they're like, well, who gets to tell him that it's Hans Gruber's brother? Like, he's like, no, I want to do that. That's going to be the best bit. Is the big reveal, So
That's right. I'm not going to
they're
do
like,
anything.
no,
I'm just
you
going
do it. You
to
guys, you.
I'm just going to stand in back and sit in the back, and I'll be quiet unless we reach the point where we need to actually talk about it.
Oh, that's so weird that they thought there might have been a version of this where they're like, oh, we can just keep this going without him knowing that that's Hans Gruber's brother. It's like, why wouldn't you just tell him?
I don't know.
But yeah,
Whatever.
but I guess we'll be getting that imminently, basically.
Yes. So, I don't have anything else for this minute. Do you have anything else?
Oh, beyond my Hugh Prantera mic drop, that's all I had.
All right. That's a great mic drop. Still works. All right. So, as I mentioned the other day, there is nothing in the script for this particular scene at this minute. So every Wednesday we have a segment called Jesus Hump Day, where my guests will give their top five Samuel L. Jackson films performances. So why don't you give us your favorite Samuel L. Jackson performances?
What have I got written down here? Because of my own handwritings. Go to the F. Sorry. Got that. That was just me gibbering to myself there for a little second. Samuel is kind of a weird one because he's literally like the highest grossing actor of all time now, basically, isn't he? Like he's because he
I'm
shows
pretty
up in
sure,
so many things, yeah. And he's a beating Frank Welker somehow to the title, and he has the thing where he kind of shows up as basically Samuel L. Jackson in a lot of things now. So it's kind of hard to gauge like in terms of actual performance. He's always going to be good, but he'll always be kind of doing variations of what Samuel L. Jackson is, except for a couple of little things. So. I'll put down my favorites for him would be Senor Love Daddy in Do the Right Thing, having to come in with the sort of Greek chorus in that film, interspersing in the action. Have you seen Do the Right Thing
Yeah,
as
sure, of
well?
course.
Love him in that, and I was like, oh, that's the triple truth, Ruth, and all that business. And then I throw in one that I just love as a complete oddity is that Sam has a cameo in The Exorcist 3. I don't do you do you do you remember him popping up in Exorcist 3, Rob?
No, I'm not a I'm not a fan of horror movies, so I've seen the first
Okay,
Exorcist, that's it.
it's yeah. Exorcist 3 is excellent. It's a great, great film. It kind of much like as we're saying there earlier, like the Super Mario Brothers movie eventually came to be respected. Exorcist 3 came out and people hated it, and that now it's renowned as like, well, it's nearly as good as the first one and stuff. It's like, and it is like it's a great film. But no, there's a George C. Scott has a dream in it where it's crazy. Like, he has a dream where he's just in a mental institution. There's been a little kid murdered, and it goes into like so odd. It's very surreal, but then also very oddly comic, because he's going through this mental institution, and like Shaq is there, and Fabio is there. The model Fabio is in the movie, just like
Oh,
as a cameo. And then they have, at this point, not famous Samuel Jackson, and he's just sitting, and he says something like, "The dead are not living, or the living are not dead," or something like that. But it's not Samuel L. Jackson. It's him physically there, but it's very blatantly not his voice. And I don't know if they were trying to get pull a fast one by being like, "Oh yeah, we got like Patrick Ewing or someone in to dub his
wow.
voice to make it even weirder," or if they were just like, I don't know if they were like they knew people would know that wasn't his voice and it would make it even more surreal, or if they just had dubbed him and now they didn't realize that, like, oh yeah, he's gonna be like a megastar in literally about 3 years' time, and everybody's gonna know who he is,
Oh,
and
wow.
everyone's gonna notice for the rest of the time that that's not the. But yeah, I think Sam said that even they did get Patrick Ewing in for the film too, and apparently Sam got as he was getting flown out to be in it, got bumped from first class apparently because Patrick Ewing showed up and they gave it to him instead. So yeah, would never happen now, of course,
The
but
Samuel L. Jackson, though.
yeah. Yeah, no, yeah, not because now he's goddamn Samuel L. Jackson.
That's right.
I'll go with it. I'll go with three. I'll go with Unbreakable, his other big Bruce Willis meetup. Because yeah, that's a great role for him, and that's a great reveal at the end. His part is Mr. Glass. Like, can't fault it. Just perfect casting, perfect delivery from Sam. Again, playing against type too. You never really see him in those kind of scenarios. But and then the top two. I gotta throw it over to his work with Quentin, the Tarantino films, which is kind of like almost people's default Samuel L. Jackson performances, but for a reason. So I go number two, I'd say Django Unchained, which again was excellent because it's like he's playing so against type, like is that sort of sniveling, accepting slave basically,
Steven.
who's just so complimentary to his master and stuff, and it's just so like. Ugh. Like it's just sort of you're just grossed out watching him basically. What's his name? And it's Steven, right? I think they call him Steven in
Yeah,
it.
Steven. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like, and it's just so when you think, oh, Samuel Jackson's gonna show up in this, it's like, oh, he's gonna be like a swaggering badass cowboy, even more cool than Django. And it's like, no, he's playing exactly the opposite of what you think Samuel is gonna play. But then on the flip side of that, I say his best role is still Jules in Pulp Fiction, like it's iconic. From the look to the delivery, there's like nearly every single line he has is memorable. Like, there's a reason that movie put Samuel L. Jackson on the map, really, So I think that's it's up there with like me, I almost should have taken it out like I did with the Lord of the Rings trilogy and Star Wars and the trilogy talk the other day. But I think no, his best role, because it's so obvious that his best role would be Jules.
Right.
But it is his best role, So, although if I had to swap out any two, like I would put Zeus would be high up there too because he is Sam's great in this film. Like he really is like just matching Bruce Willis's energy beat for beat, and he's just got so many great moments to himself as well. And just one of I have a friend of mine who's obsessed with this film, and we both really analyze that moment of when they're trying to get on the boat way, way later in the movie. And Zeus just has this moment of like, I can make it. And he's about to go for it. And McClane is like, oh, you stupid? No, come on, let's go. We're just really fascinated. Like, why is that in the film? Like, why is it like clearly he would make that? But it's just like a great little character moment for Zeus in that moment where he's just come so far that he's just like, I can make it. Like, and McClane just has to shoot him down instantly and be like, no, no one could make that. Like, what are you doing? But it's so brief, but I love it as a thing. But yeah, those would be my top five Sam Jackson roles. Obviously, one of them's not great because it's literally not even him speaking in Exorcist 3, but I wanted to mention it because it's such a random, like, obs like it's as obscure a fact as Simon is a colonel, I would say.
Yeah, I
That
guess
Sam
makes
Jackson
sense.
is in that movie. So.
Yeah, I'll give you that one.
Yeah. Has Jules been the top for most guests so far?
So far, yes.
Yeah, I
By
anticipated
far, by
that.
far.
Yeah, of course, yeah. But deserved, with good
There's
cause.
quite a large gap between Jules and Mr. Glass. Yeah, he's number two. And then
Again, also
Zeus
deserved.
is currently number three.
Yeah. All right, no,
Followed by
he's going.
Steven. So there you
Really, it's so Nick Fury not getting a look in at all with people.
go.
But then I guess maybe Nick Fury's too, well, that's just him being Sam, isn't it? That's not really a performance. That's just he could do that in his sleep
There is
now, basically.
actually not
Like
a
so.
single person who used of the nine guests. You are my ninth guest so far. Not a single one has used anything from the MCU.
Wow, yeah. I don't know if it's because he's good, but then at the same time, again, it is just he's
Sorry,
done a
I
good
take
enough
that
job
back.
where
I take that back. There are two people that mentioned Iron Man, but they had it low on their
oh,
list.
okay, yeah, but yeah, the fact that the guy is now essentially oh, that is Nick Fury to people. Like it went from being white guy with a white streak in his hair and David Hasselhoff to being no, Nick Fury is Samuel L. Jackson and Samuel L. Jackson is Nick Fury. But yeah, it's just because he's so he slips into it so much like a glove that it's just yeah, you wouldn't put that down as a great performance because it's just like, oh, so he's just doing what he does, That's, it
Exactly.
just comes naturally to him there. So.
Right. All right. So now, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
Yeah. You can obviously on Bat Minute we talk about the Batman movies minute by minute, but should also plug too that in between seasons we do other episodes. So if you're not in the mood for a long form minute by minute analysis, we do special episodes that are sort of interrelated to Batman between seasons. So we have sort of feature length, 1.5 hour, 2 hour episodes talking about Mars Attacks or Joel Schumacher's Phantom of the Opera, or we did ones about all the Prince movies, the tie into 89, had our coverage of Purple Rain with our good friends Dale Kingsmill and Omar Najam. It was one of my favorite episodes we ever did, was the Purple Rain episode. So yeah, if you just want to hear me talking for a little bit, but you don't want to have to hear my opinions about an entire film, you can just hop over to the Bat Minute feed on all good podcatchers, but you'll find that you'll find those episodes in there as well.
All right, excellent. And while you're doing that, you can go over and subscribe any podcatcher you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. You can also find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, feel free to shoot one to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Niles, we shall be back tomorrow, but until then, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
Batman comes marching home again, hoorah, hoorah! We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hoorah, hoorah! The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.